All right, we are back in the beautiful visitor center here in Building 92, Redmond, Washington. We have a special guest, Tim Heuer.
Thanks for coming on.
Good to see you, Charles.
Great to see you. We had a great talk at the Visual Studio launch.
Yes, we did, yes.
Now, folks out there, please ask questions. Go to Channel 9. In fact, you're on Channel 9 right now. You're watching this. Scroll down the page and type in whatever name you want to give yourself and the question. And we'll cue it, and we're going to ask Tim. It's all about XAML, and we're going to really focus this being more towards engineers. You're all developers out there. We want to talk about things you need to understand as you build these modern XAML-based apps for Windows 8. So first off the bat, take us through, like, how do I think through designing a very performant list view?
List view, yes. So one of the things that we see in like a lot of the, I think it all starts in design, frankly.
Okay.
So as we look across the UI platform, right, there's a lot of things that we have guiding principles across UI design. So first and foremost, any good, you know, developing a high-performant application starts with what is the design, right? It can't be your last thought. It has to be one of your first thoughts.
Okay.
And as we look at some of the UI principles, you look at the start screen as an example in Windows, the store app. A lot of these have these list-based, or you know, we call them list view or grid view-based UI paradigms. So that's, you know, there's a lot of things that are involved in there. There's could be images, variable-sized items, tons of items, you know, hundreds of items versus maybe a smaller set of items. So I think the principle first has to start in design and understanding, like, you know, what is the intent of your user interaction with the user? But then, you know, obviously you get the devil in the details of how I, as the developer now, how can I ensure that I marry that good user experience in the platform?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that you can think about, you know, a lot of what are you actually displaying on the screen? A lot of people display images as these kind of tile-based UI and these lists. You know, are the sizes that you're displaying actually the size of the image that you got from the web or something like that? It's actually one of the more common things we see is
interesting.
Someone downloads, you know, some 20 megapixel image and they're only showing it in a 100 by 100 viewport. So, you know, you're paying the cost of us decoding that image at the full scale, but even though you're resizing it. So that's, you know, one of the things that we see often.
Okay.
Another thing is, you know, the number of UI elements you have. So the richer and richer your view is, the more UI elements, whether that be JavaScript or XAML nodes or whatever, or sorry, HTML elements or XAML elements, you know, the more and more you have, the more stress is going to be put on the engine to render those elements and how they work together, whether they're overdrawn or, you know, need to marry or measure each other and things like that. So those are some of the initial considerations to think about.
So you mentioned the interesting thing about the, because I, you know, we all see in the App Store a fair number of apps that actually do use images on top of a XAML surface.
Right.
And it's very interesting that you mention they actually could be the same size of the image that I downloaded, which say it's 100 kilobytes.
100 gigabytes.
Yeah, a 200 kilobyte image is a big image for the web.
Mm-hmm.
Should I be doing, as a developer, some background processing and decoding it myself, resizing it myself?
Yeah, it's a good, you know, there's two pivots to that, right? So let's say I'm retrieving images from a public service, whether it be Flickr or Amazon, you know, a catalog or other people's catalogs, right? I'm getting product images or people's individual photos from some service, right? I don't control that back end. Mm. And maybe some of those services say I can give you large, medium, small, thumbnail, right? And I have to determine which one is the lowest common denominator for my UI.
Okay.
And most likely it's not going to match what exactly my UI is. So I'm going to pick, you know, the best of the worst that's going to pick me. But it still may be a 500 by 500 pixel image, 200K, but that's not what I'm displaying. I'm displaying 100 by 100. Mm. So in that scenario, right, like, you can't insert yourself into the back end to change the processing of what's being delivered to you.
Mm.
So in the UI platforms, we give you some mechanisms to kind of get in the way of that before it gets on the screen.
Mm.
In XAML specifically, in bitmap source, we allow you to specify the decode height and width. So even though you are getting something that's, you know, 200, 300K, 500 by 500, you're only going to display it in 100 square tile. you don't need the rest of that resolution. So tell us that you want to decode to 100 by 100, and the runtime will do the work to optimize that that rendering for you.
Awesome. Yeah. And it'll do the runtime will do that work at runtime.
At runtime, yeah. I mean, during the decode, right?
During the decode.
So when we get the image, you're saying, oh, only decode at 100 by 100. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. well, we don't need that those tight resolution in the pixels, so we're not going to decode the 500-pixel image because you've told us you don't need that.
And that's going to improve performance.
It should improve in performance, yeah.
So, I mean, in some sense, if you're building UI that you can't pinch and zoom,
right.
and I can think of an app right now on the top of my head that doesn't allow you to do that, and that's fine.
That's right.
Then decode, play this game.
Yeah.
So listen to what Tim just said. Please play that game. It's very important, especially as you get onto this beautiful device.
Yes.
Which, of course, is ARM, not 86 or Atom, and we're going to talk about that. These are things you'll need to think about. Rock and roll, we got questions. Thank you. First up, Sam. Sam wants to know, WinRT XAML is great, but lacks some features from WPF. Will WinRT XAML, well, let's call it what it is, Sam. It's Windows XAML. So will Windows XAML evolve separate from OS releases, or will we have to wait for new OS to get additional features? This is a question we probably can't talk about, but...
Well, I think it's important to realize is that when we talk about WinRT, so XAML is a part of the Windows runtime. It is not a separate part of the Windows runtime, right? It is a part of the Windows namespace, and it is part of Windows runtime.
Yes.
So XAML ships as a Windows component. It's not an SDK. It's not a part of the .NET framework. It is a part of Windows, and so we ship with Windows.
Right on. So thanks for the question, Sam. George, since XAML translates to a web-based application fairly seamlessly, Okay. What are the benefits of using another method of development, C#, C++? Does XAML translate to web-based applications seamlessly?
Yeah, I'm not sure how I follow that aspect of it. But I think maybe the crux is, like, what are the advantages of choosing language preference?
Let's turn George's question into that.
That's
so C#, C++.
You know, for me, this gets back to the when .NET 1 was released. You know, we go, it's like C# or VB, right? It's kind mm-hmm. of the same type of thing. On this, we have a little different of a pivot because it's not always about the language syntax as it was in, like, IL-based languages, C# and VB. Whereas when you look at kind of the differences between C# as a language and C++ as a language, there's a pivot there. There's the language aspect of it, and then there's the the runtimes, if you will, the CRT versus the CLR. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some trade-offs when you make some of those decisions. Mm-hmm. Obviously, C++ is a native language. There is no CLR. There is no runtime in between. Of course, mm-hmm. there's the C++ runtime, mm-hmm. which is a thin layer to be able to process all that. But generally speaking, when we think about things of what you would do in C++, if you're doing a DirectX application, that's kind of a no-brainer. You should use as close to the metal as you can. Get the power and performance that C++, that's one of the promises that they have. Large computations, long-running tasks and those type of things are very advantageous to C++.
Hmm.
And then, we've invested a lot in .NET languages and C#, and the language itself has evolved quite significantly over time. So it's a productive environment as well. And there's some trade-offs that you have with terms of performance. Your mm-hmm. app does have to boot up the CLR in the instance. Mm-hmm. So you have to measure that and mm-hmm. understand the impact of that to your scenario.
Excellent. And I will say that in C++ you're compiling source code to what will eventually be machine-targeted machine code.
Right.
So the assembly of whatever, is it an ARM? Is it x86? Is it x64? There will be no runtime involved during startup at all.
Right.
It's just code that's going to run.
Right.
It's already mapped out to the specific hardware. It's directly mapped out to the hardware. So, but you get the high-level abstractions. The only thing I would say is that with C++ 11 and C++ CX, that is very user-friendly syntax
yeah.
for writing these XAML apps. So if you want to go native, try out C++ CX or do C#, which is a great language, or VB.NET. But the moral of the story is, enough of Charles, and let's ask another question. So can C++ or C# be used as code behind for HTML5 applications?
So that's a yes and no answer. Yes, you can have native or managed code kind of back your JavaScript application. However, I'm assuming it's really meaning about UI interop. Like, could I have like an angle bracket foo XAML element show up on my web page? And we don't have UI interop at that level currently. So if you had like you wanted to send off some image processing, one of the good examples is you could totally create your HTML application using the camera capture APIs, which are Windows runtime, and you'll get the raw image. And maybe you want to send that off to do some kind of image manipulation aspect, right? That those things are really best served in native code. And so you could send that off to some WinRT component, process that, and blit it back on the screen as a source of some, you know, to some image element in HTML. So we don't have UI interop, but absolutely you can have these. We typically, you see in documentation referred to as these hybrid applications, where it's HTML and native code or managed in native code and those type of things.
Excellent. So now the people out there, if you're a native, if you're a XAML developer, and you're writing Windows Store apps, we have Tim Heuer here. You should ask some questions. I'm seeing a lot of HTML5 questions. Isn't necessarily his specialty. Certainly he's...
still part of the UI platform.
Still part of the UI platform, man. Yeah. So rock and roll.
Yeah.
So can C++ or C# be used as code behind? We already asked this question, so we're going to move along. I want to kind of talk about, you mentioned briefly when we talked about measurement, right? How do you do perf analysis? Let's educate people in the audience.
Yeah, I think that's an area where, you know, admittedly, I think we as a company can improve in two aspects, both in you know, how to do it, but number one, in really just getting the message out. We do have tools to do it. We do have the means to help you identify where there's some issues in your application. But you know, we need to make sure that we help get the message out. So I think one of the pitfalls that developers, especially you know, if you're kind of an independent developer and you've got your awesome, you know, 8-core developer machine, you know, your stock trader multi-monitor situations, and the last thing you're thinking about is someone using one of those, right?
Yes.
The Surface device. So, because your machine's just spinning like crazy, you're compiling in 2 seconds, your app launches super quick, and the thing is, the measurement starts at really having a realistic expectation of what are your target users. And really, in our world, the target users are going to be the Surface end users, and that's what you should be thinking about. And so you really need to design for that as a perf aspect. And don't benchmark on your Core i7. You need to benchmark on something like an ARM machine or a lower powered netbook or something like that. And those are those improvements that you want, right? So ideally, I'm awesome on ARM. I should be extra awesome on x86 and x64.
Awesome.
So from a measurement standpoint, we do have our code in the UI platforms are pretty instrumented through ETW, which
Great.
The Visual Studio tools allow you to kind of turn on trace listening and provide some reporting aspects of that. And so that's the main mechanism to get started of doing that.
Great.
Additionally, we have some other kind of unique things in the UI platforms themselves to help you during runtime as well. So one of the other common pitfalls we see is this concept of overdraw, what we call overdraw, where let's say I have that image that we were talking about before, but it's really on top of, you know, some rectangle that has a color, which is on top of some border or things like that, you know, these kind of deep areas of UI elements. Well, the thing is, like, the user only sees the top-level element, but the runtime is still drawing the other elements. We call that overdraw, right,
okay.
where things that are not visual are still being drawn and measured.
Understood.
So in our runtime, we have the capability to turn on what we call these overdraw heat map. And so you can visually see where the darker areas are in your application. The darker the color, the more overdraw there is. And that's a visual cue to you to say, what am I doing in that data template, that UI element? What am I doing there? Why is it so deep red? What am I not thinking about there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great point. I mean, when you build apps, you're still writing software.
Yeah.
You still are engineering software. Testing and performance and fine-tuning, these are critical, especially across the spectrum of hardware. ARM is not x86, as you so eloquently put it. Now, this guy happens to have a Tegra 4-core processor with 128-bit registers. So you can smoke on this with C++. I know that. But we'll get into that later. But don't get me wrong. I mean, the moral of the story is please test your UI for performance, not just your algorithms in the back end.
You know, I tell I think we tell our end users, right, when you're working with like a Word document, like save early and often, right? So you don't like lose a word. It's the same principle when you're doing software development. Like you should test early and often, and you should analyze your perf early and often. It shouldn't, if you're waiting till the last minute to say, I'm done with my application, now how's the perf?
Yeah.
You're just going to create more work for yourself, like completely. No one will ever disagree with that.
Yeah.
Because you'll have to go back and say, I've got a perf problem here, and I need to solve that, and it may involve significant rework of your application.
Absolutely.
So don't get to that point. Don't wait to the store submission point and you get that whack result that says, oh, you didn't respond to suspend in a certain amount of time, right? And now you've lost market share, right? Because now you're waiting to solve your perf problems before you can even get to the store.
Exactly. You should be so ready for the store. Michael Henson asks, does XAML use DirectX underneath to draw to the screen?
Yes.
Great question. That doesn't necessarily mean, it means a lot. So even in HTML5 on Canvas, it's DirectX underneath.
Yes, I believe it is.
So DirectX.
I'm not the expert on that one.
No, but it is. I know for sure, right? So DirectX is a big part of our.
It is. I mean, you know, like we said, this is the UI platform for Windows. So unlike previous UI platforms that we delivered through other mechanisms where. You know, maybe there was some cross-platform play or things like that where we've kind of had to bring our own subsystems. Like we completely rely on the underlying systems of Windows, and that involves DirectX and DirectWrite and D2D and all these subsystems that we can rely on because it's a part of Windows. We know it will be there. We should take advantage of what Windows is providing, and that's exactly what we do.
Rock and roll, and you do it very well. All right, so Ozzy asks, what approach do you recommend, Tim, for C-sharp XAML developer who wants to develop 2D games on Windows 8. Continue with XAML and C-sharp or learn C++ DirectX?
That's a good question. I think for any C-sharp developer who has grown up in the .NET languages or maybe even classic VB, kind of the Microsoft classic languages, outside of C++, I think the thought of going to C++ is daunting, right? Mm-hmm. They feel that there's this barrier there. You mentioned earlier about C++ 11 and CX.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those barriers are getting removed. I think I could give a sheet of, or screen, I guess I should say, a screen of C++ CX to a C# developer, and they would be able to very easily follow the flow there. It actually, a lot of the CX features are kind of feel language-wise like C#. So
totally.
You could definitely follow a little bit more. And so I think, the first thing I would say is that ideally you're going to get the best performance out of DirectX and native code for a game. And the mention was 2D games, so I'm assuming these are more like casual games. There are existing physics engines out in C# that you could use. So I definitely wouldn't try to reinvent the wheel there to take a kind of what's out there.
Mm.
And then there's also bridging technologies that not necessarily are going to give you any better perf, but there's some companies that have created wrappers around DirectX and things. Not necessarily something that we always recommend because you want to get when you've made the decision mentally to go to DirectX, you should really think of it as a native play.
Amen.
And go there.
Go to DirectX.
Yeah, so I would say learn is one of the best options.
Great. Hector Luciano Jr., huh?
Right.
Has some questions. What diagnostic information is available for developers on the client device? So you mentioned ETW tracing. Mm-hmm. What else?
On the client device, you should be able to get a lot of the typical information you get from VS Debugger is still available on these devices. And in fact, like I'm not sure how many people know that you could actually remote debug to these devices.
Nice.
And so from Visual Studio, I can do it wirelessly. I actually don't even have to have a cable or anything. I can just have a remote debugger running on my Surface, and from my desktop at F5, and it just shows up, and breakpoints, and all that good stuff. Jason Zander actually did a really great blog post detailing this out and all the tools that you need.
Awesome.
So anything that you normally would get out of the debugger, you will be able to get from debugging on these devices too. With ARM, there are some nuanced specifics as far as kind of what some of the instruction set information like shows up in the debugger and certain call stacks. But I think some of the recent VS is on this update quarterly cadence. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the CTPs that was just released tries to start addressing some of those in the debugger as well.
Awesome.
I'm not sure if that directly answered the question. But
no, I think it's an excellent question. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a bunch of information available to you. I love the fact of wirelessly debugging this guy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's killer.
Actually, yeah.
That's killer. All right, so Area One, I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, sir. Can I have WPF XAML interop nicely inside Windows 8 apps, XAML apps? So, again, I have a bunch of WPF. Mm. He's asking about interop, which I don't know how that would work, but can you?
Yeah. Directly, the answer to that is no, right?
Okay. Like,
you can't host WPF. You can't host Silverlight. It is XAML, the XAML language. Mm-hmm. It conforms to the XAML specification. Yes, there are some differences in the elements that are represented between WPF and Windows that exist today. So, you know, WPF has this concept of a window. Mm-hmm. The window concept is actually kind of just baked into the UI platforms. It's not a XAML concept anymore. It's just an app platform concept. There's other, you know, feature things that don't exist from WPF. And, you know, as our goal in designing the XAML platform for Windows was not let's bring everything, you know, forward. It's really let's think about what are the things that meet the goals of the platform and the goals of these types of applications, and how do we optimize that so that we don't create situations for you, the developer, to just all of a sudden have this grab bag of stuff that you're putting too much together and not concentrating on the user experience there.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's actually a great point in the Windows 8 App Store SDK, if you will. So the WinRT API is actually very well thought out. And you don't have 1,000 ways to do the same things.
Yeah.
It's not a huge framework of stuff. And I think the consolidation and, you know, I think you guys did a great job. That's all I kind of wanted to throw out there. And so, you know, please play around with it. I think you're going to find not very confusing to get simple things done, like open a file, close a file, read a file asynchronously, download something from the internet.
Yeah.
Do things that, you know, you're going to be making in modern connected apps.
And in fact, it made the harder things a lot easier as well. Things that you normally have to thunk down to Win32, right, are now just kind of elevated to you.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
And asynchronous to boot.
And asynchronous. Yeah.
So asynchrony is something that I highly recommend people out there in the audience, you really need to get your heads around.
Yes.
Because this is a very asynchronous app model in the modern shell or Windows Store app, or I would just call it Windows 8. This is, I mean, Windows RT, man. Rock and roll. So this is an interesting question. Our middleware, so you mentioned like C++, if you want to hit DirectX, write C++. There are things like Unity, which is a higher level engine that provides sort of higher level APIs that actually will compile down to DirectX instructions.
Mm-hmm.
You can write Windows 8 apps with that stuff?
Yes.
That's his question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if these providers are providing WinRT capable or WinRT safe, whatever the word you want to use, something that will, you know, pass the store certification, essentially, is how a lot of people mentally think of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they're providing these frameworks for you to use, it's absolutely certain you could use them and probably should, right? I mean, because WinRT in general is a general purpose kind of platform API, right? It itself is not a game API. It's not a physics engine. It's not a forms engine or anything like that. So, right, we provide the platform underpinning so that people like Unity or SharpDX or these other people can come along and build on top of them.
Great. So that was a question from Balaji. So thanks for asking that. Please keep asking questions, people. We have Tim here. If you have XAML questions, Windows App Store development, this is the man to talk to. When you're developing an app, you made an excellent point earlier about, hey, I have this monster dev machine. And, you know, compiles fast. Startup like this, I'm going to pass whack, no problem. But in reality, it's probably going to be tested on this device if you choose to say this app is also for ARM.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. And then when you submit, the store is going to test that it actually works on an ARM device, which, of course, isn't going to be as powerful as your monster dev machine, X64.
Right.
So take me through a little bit. Is there a way, if I don't have access to an ARM device, what is a poor developer to do?
That is an excellent question. I mean, the best answer to that is get access to a device. I mean, okay. if you're serious about your application, sure. and this is a target for you, I mean, I think, I know people are not flush with cash like always, but I mean, again, it really has to get back to you. If you're serious about your product, you should be serious about your tools and your targets.
Totally.
So I firmly believe that. You know, the other things you can do is really to, you know, optimize in the way, in the areas that, you know, people are seeing some of these pitfalls. And in fact, one of the build sessions, I believe it's Wednesday evening, is talking all about perf.
Awesome.
And kind of a deeper dive in some of those areas.
Great.
You know, even the simplest thing is like the start screen, right? We think about in Windows apps, like you provide a bitmap image for your splash screen. Sorry, not the start screen. The splash screen for your app. And how that works is like, you know, when you tell the platform that you're ready to display your content, then the splash screen goes away. Well, as a part of the perf test for certification, like that splash screen can only show for a certain amount of time.
Sure.
So we do see a lot of people doing like initialization code in their application class, not realizing like they really only have 5 to 10 seconds to do that, and that goes by pretty quick. But again, you know, we talk about how flexible WinRT is. There's an API that allows you to essentially extend the splash screen. Mm. And I recommend people do that in every single app. It provides not only a real perf benefit, but it also provides a perceived user experience perf benefit, right? Which sometimes can be half the battle,
sure.
right? And so if my splash screen is there and I don't have any feedback that something's happening, then I may terminate it, or it may crash, and it may go away on itself. Mm-hmm. But if I use this extended splash screen, I can provide other UI that says, hey, you know, synchronizing, or, you know, downloading your movies, or so I can provide the user some information. Hey, I know you're there. I'm doing something for you. Give me a second, right? And then you're also providing the platform. You've already taken the handshake off the platform. You said, yep, I'm ready to do something.
Great.
And you're not waiting anymore.
Excellent.
So that's a quick tip.
Greg asks, in what scenarios do you prefer, Tim, to develop XAML in Visual Studio or Blend? Like, take us through how you do it. And which makes more sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, when Blend came out, there was this big push about, you know, this designer paradigm. I think I've personally never seen a developer that hasn't had both tools open at the same time.
Hmm.
I think Blend is really good for... I still think, you know, the promise is there. Blend is really good for designer-based tasks. In the XAML world and actually in the HTML world and across all the UI platforms, you know, where you do your best visual styling is going to be on the Blend surface because it has those things built in to do that. That's where in XAML we allow the richer template editing for controls to be able to record animations and change storyboards. On the HTML side, you know, if you've watched any of Christian Shorman or Karupa's sessions on using Blend for HTML to style a live running app, you know,
it's great.
It's pretty compelling to see that. So definitely in the visual styling is where I personally use Blend more. In fact, I was trying to help a customer the other day, and they said, how do I change XYZ? And I emailed them back, and I said, you know, when in doubt, blend it out. It was my little cheesy term, right? You know, because sometimes, you know, we as the owners of the UI platform, we don't always remember the devil in the details of how our UI elements are constructed.
Mm.
But thankfully, you know, we have a tool like Blend that I can just right-click and see all the different template parts and say, oh, that's the one I need to edit and provide a different style for that.
Awesome.
And Visual Studio, I think stands on its own for me. It's definitely my number one tool that I use as a developer. I'm definitely more a developer than I am a visual developer.
Okay.
And you know, the combination of having Blend in Visual Studio for XAML now is extremely helpful to get a lot of those benefits, you know, and still have the richer experience in the visual styling on the Blend side. But they're included, right? In the Express tool, you get them both.
So absolutely. Now, that actually brings up a really interesting question, because at our talk in the Visual Studio launch, downtown Seattle, I don't remember the exact date, but the last time you and I did this,
yep.
We talked about designing and developing. And so here's what I want to ask you. In this modern app world, right, they have to be beautiful apps. And if you're a developer who's really confident and skilled at writing the code that runs after the button's clicked, as opposed to the beautiful button with the custom image on it and this beautiful design architecture. I mean, whatever happened to the developer-designer continuum? Remember the stuff from Mix back in the day? What's going on there? I mean, it seems to make sense.
Yeah, I think it still makes sense, and I think you know, even now more than ever, it still absolutely makes sense. So if you're developing an application and you don't consider yourself a designer, or you haven't thought about design, you know, I think that's probably a flaw in your plan. Mm. You know, find a buddy that is a designer
and learn.
You know, I think art is a hard thing to learn.
You're right.
Personally, but you know, there are some things there's principles that can guide you in understanding. You know, snap to the grid, and a lot of our UI guidelines on design.windows.com, for example, talk about some of these concepts. So you can understand the principles, but then when it gets into probably you and I trying to say, like, I really want it to look like X, I really want it to feel like this, or this animation, I want it to be smooth here and there.
Exactly.
You know, those are the things where you really need someone like a graphic designer or an integrator or motion designer to really help you out. Totally. There's lots of resources for that as well that are out there. You know, independents, you know, auction sites bidding sites that allow you to find a resource there. So if you're an independent developer that you don't have a designer friend or can't afford to pay, you know, a significant a company to do it, you know, there's options for you. But I still believe, like, don't ignore the principle.
Rock and roll.
Because that's what your users see first.
Sure. Yeah. And in our model, which isn't skeuomorphic, to use a Rick Barraza type term, where we're sort of authentically digital, two-dimensional, at least in the base experience.
Yeah.
You know, in some sense, I wanted to ask you about a very compelling scenario, and that is D3D on top of a XAML control.
Uh-huh.
And I've noticed, you know, there's some apps in the store that I highly recommend, like Fresh Paint, where you can see they've done intelligent things with, you know, the world's largest shader, which is their paint surface, with XAML and XAML with DirectX on top of it in this really compelling sort of menu experience.
Right.
Not necessarily authentically digital, but not skeuomorphic. Something in between.
Right.
And it
right.
makes for still a beautiful experience. So, you know, it's an interesting topic. It would be fun to talk about. How do you know when you've gone too far?
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, you know, UI principles are just that. And, you know, we as Windows have a particular point of view on how we think the experience is presented to users, and, you know, content over Chrome, and focus on, you know, the task, the one thing that your app does well, and, you know, remove distractions from the user being able to accomplish that. I think those are all great principles. Mm. And I think if you can still achieve those principles through having, you know, some unique design, I don't think at all we're saying you shouldn't have any unique design.
Sure.
But I think, you know, don't go crazy with, like, you know, the clip art all over the place, and those type of concepts is really what we're getting to. And, you know, the Web 2.0 days of a lot of the embossing and, you know, reflections and things like that are really distractions from what the user's trying to do. And that's what we're asking developers and designers to focus on.
Rock and roll, man. All right, so Radu Krisan. I like this. It's a great question, Radu. So can I use Boost libraries? So Boost, of course, are these C++ libraries. Excellent functionality. Can I use them in conjunction in XAML apps? So I can use C++ in XAML. He's asking, can I use Boost?
I'm not too familiar with
the Boost libraries.
Boost libraries.
So,
yeah.
I believe that I could answer that question the following way.
Awesome.
So if you can use Boost libraries in your application, then you can use them in your application with XAML on the front end. Remember, if it's C++ that our compiler can compile,
yeah,
it's not trying to do things down in the restricted areas of the legacy or older desktop, which of course isn't legacy, it's still there, but you know what I mean, Win32, like pure Win32, then no. But yes, you can use some Boost. You can throw some Boost on your XAML, man. You can. So if it's standard C++, compiles in our compiler, I can't imagine why not. If we're going to learn more about C++ and stuff later today. So if you're a C++ dev, Radu, come back, because we're going to talk to you about the phone. You might want to ask, can I use Boost libraries on the phone? I don't know. Let's ask Peter Tor. But that's a good question, and let's move along. But the fact that you can use C++ in your world, I love it.
Yeah.
Because it's the first time C++ developers get to use modern UI
And in fact, you know, like, I keep, this is one of the things I keep harping on. You know, if you're an ISV as well and you're writing a custom control in C++, you know, you're writing it for C++ developers as well as managed developers. You kind of, like, get that for free by making that decision to say, I want to do a custom control and I'm writing it in C++ CX, like you just get this benefit of being able to expose it to WinRT for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all the C# developers now are able to consume it as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So remember that. You know, in some sense, that could actually be a business model. Like I'm a component vendor, right? I'm going to build WinRT components that other apps can use. Maybe I do some fantastic rendering animation, or you know, I'm this super highly performant image processing component. I can run in any kind of circumstance, or I do very compelling things, whatever. The moral of the story is there's a market there.
Right.
The soil is rich for that type of stuff. Vivek, haven't seen you in a while, man. Vivek Pai is back. He's a Niner. Always nice to see Niners that we recognize.
All right.
So, Tim, how much freedom do devs have with design? Does everything have to be square boxes? Didn't we just talk about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think we just talked about
that. Hey, Vivek, come on, man. No, yeah.
I think the answer to that is no. You know, and I think you'll be hard-pressed to get anyone to really give you a definitive, you should do this for your app answer.
Totally.
Because, you know, my app may be a game that has, you know, a first-person shooter type game, and I do want my heads-up display to be very, you know, medieval looking or something like that.
Sure.
But, you know, if I'm developing some, you know, commerce catalog that taps into, you know, a very popular back-end engine or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe those are the things I think that we're saying you should be authentically digital on. You know, should you represent books in a bookshelf? You know, those are the things that I think you as the app developer have to determine what's best for your app.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it gets back to that principle of focusing on what does my app want to do great? Is it displaying books on a bookshelf or is it reading the book?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you really need to focus on and concentrate on that experience and
mm-hmm.
hone that skill and remove the distractions.
Absolutely. And I think you made an excellent point. It's not like, you know, we're going to get a lot of apps in the store. Let's not kid ourselves. There's a lot of developers. They're watching this. They're watching build. We have 2,500 people on campus right now, all devs, learning. They're going to build apps. I mean, a hackathon's going on right now with Dan Fernandez and company. I think it's, you know, it's going to be a 48-hour thing. Lots of apps are going to be written.
Right.
And in some sense, we're probably, the answer to this question is probably in what actually happens in the real world.
Right.
And we're all going to learn and grow together. But you have to have basic guidelines.
And the good thing about the UI platforms in Windows is that we've kind of built as much as we could of those guidelines into the controls that you're going to use as well.
Rock and roll.
So when you're using a button, when you're using the grid view, when you're using the motion, right? So we have a particular point of view on how panning should happen with touch, and we built that into the controls so that you don't have to think about that.
Mm.
So there's a level of personality you get out of the box that exhibits the personality of the operating system itself.
Awesome.
And then you just build on top of that.
No, that's actually a stellar point. So we talk a lot about design for touch. It turns out your XAML controls and XAML in general is built for touch already.
Right.
And it's one of the beautiful things about Windows XAML. As a developer, I don't have to sit there and implement touch. I get wonderful things for free.
Right, exactly. I mean, the touch implementations that you would do as a developer are going to be additive value to what it is, right? So, you know, if you wanted to do some different type of manipulation of particular elements, you know,
mm-hmm.
of course, we don't know the manipulations that you want.
Of course.
So we're not going to do those automatically, but we provide the manipulation data to you to be able to respond to that. So, yeah, we're very much across the UI platforms are very much understand touch and build that into our own controls as well as expose the necessary events and APIs for you to do whatever you want with gesture recognition and things like that.
Excellent. So now when we're on one of these larger machines, and of course I'm not talking about the 82-inch
yeah.
Perceptive Pixel beautiful device here.
That is huge.
Which is touch, of course. And Jeff Hahn is the maestro of touch. And he will be on Friday. So, but the point is, On a standard computer, right? Look, when we write code, I don't know about you. I like keyboards, man.
Mm-hmm.
I like keyboards. My mouse doesn't cause. I love my little comfortable mouse and my keyboard. And you can crank, right?
Right.
When I on this machine, which happens to be Windows 8, I also run apps. And so, what do I have to think through as a developer? Or is this also for free? Because I don't really think it is. But I'm gonna ask you a question. I have to now think about the non-touch experience as well, right?
You do. I think there's some nuances there.
Okay.
And it's good to point it out. You know, we talk about, you know, develop touch and get kind of mouse for free. And that, you know, that is a good principle to understand and to be guided by. But I think there's situations where if you know, if I have only a mouse and a keyboard and I don't have a touchpad anywhere, like I have, you know, just a traditional mouse and a keyboard, you know, how do I pinch? You know, so if my app has only given me affordance to pinch via touch mechanism, you know, have you alienated the mouse user at that point? Or are you giving them a mechanism to use the mouse wheel as an example? Actually, some of that is built into the platform.
Right,
so
on.
Maybe that's not a good example.
That's cool.
There's those type of things you have to think about. You know, what are the touch specific things that I'm doing, and have I, you know, have I afforded for a keyboard only experience for accessibility reasons? As another good point. You know, for the someone who can't even see the screen, so they don't know where to touch, and so they're relying on narrator to give them information on what's going back. So thinking about those things. Mm-hmm. But I think still when you see controls like Semantic Zoom, which is very much a touch experience, you see that built into the Semantic Zoom control experience, we do have keyboard support. Like, you know, you don't have to think about that. You can control plus minus to get the events, and we actually give you a visual for a mouse that you
Great.
Can click on and things. So
awesome. So we have about 6 minutes left, 5-6 minutes left. If you're a XAML developer and you're thinking about writing a Windows Store app, or you've already done it, please ask some questions. We have Tim here. Maybe you have some technical questions that you want answered. Now's your chance. Otherwise, you're going to leave it to me, man. And I'm not even a XAML developer. So the moral of the story is ask questions. You're on Channel 9. You're watching this. You see a little thing under there. Type in your name. Type in your message. Press send. And we'll get it answered. So, Tim, we talked about DirectX on top of XAML, so we're not going to go there again. What are some of the most interesting use cases you've seen come through in your experience of, like, very innovative ways of using XAML mixed with DirectX or not? Just a beautiful XAML app that's, like, maybe your favorite app.
Yeah, I think, actually, I think FreshPaint is a good example of probably the most you know, integrated in the smallest level of details of DirectX and XAML that I've seen. And I think you did a show with them.
Yes,
right?
I did. Yeah. So you should watch that on Channel 9. We go
so I think
deep.
They go into the details of, like, you know, when you kind of visually see, like, oh, wow, that little piece right there is DirectX, but the rest isn't. You know, that's interesting to see that.
Yes.
But I think the ones that jump out to me are the, you know, visually appealing experiences as well that have taken into account the personality of Windows design without being, you know, just a standard color palette. You know, one that always comes to mind to me is Cocktail Flow.
Yes.
You know, I don't even drink, but
you
like I think the application is very, very well designed,
yeah.
And it's fluid and it hits all the principles of a lot of the principles of the UI patterns without looking, you know, like the default grid application. And so they've done a very good job paying attention to the finer details in there. And then you know, another one that I like pointing out that is fun to play in the store as well for my kids is a game called Jellyfish.
Okay.
And it's that's interesting to me from a technical standpoint, knowing how it was implemented. But also it's, you know, the attention to detail on some of the visuals and the animations that really have just made it delightful and pleasing are the words we like to use.
Absolutely.
You know, to use. So those are the ones that jump out to me.
And those work, they all, by the way, work great on ARM.
Yeah.
So kudos to them for, and, you know, I do drink, and I use Cocktail Flow once in a while because, you know, I'm a whiskey. I love whiskeys, and I love finding new, you know, drinks.
Yeah.
So also being someone who uses these devices a lot, working on a relatively large project myself, been testing performance quite a bit. And to the Cocktail Flow people, nice job on your scrolling list view, because those are images, there's drop shadow, they're using XAML, and it's pretty nice and smooth on ARM, so rock and roll, guys, good work.
Yep.
And so it can be done.
It can be done.
Yeah. Right on. So as we wind down here, thanks for coming on Channel 9. Are you going to be having a talk here at Build?
I am not giving a talk. We have a lot of our developer team this year is giving talks, so you know, hear it from the people who actually implemented the code is great. So we have on the UI platform team, we've got good kind of walkthroughs end-to-end on writing applications with both JavaScript and XAML.
Mm-hmm.
And then from The XAML side specifically, there's a couple talks on perf I mentioned before.
Great.
It'll be a really good one to go. A colleague of mine going deep dive on like how to analyze perf and you know what are the things to look for. Mm-hmm. And then we have another deep dive talking about list experiences.
Right.
You know, how to create great list experiences with the UI controls that we provide.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's like one of the great things about the platform is the speed with which you can go from idea to am I going to pass WAC? Of course, you know what that is. That's the pre-certification step.
That's right.
Automated tooling that'll tell you, it took you 20 minutes to launch, 20 seconds to launch. That's actually interesting, launch speed. Now, XAML is implemented, it's native.
It
Windows
is
XAML's native.
It's WinRT.
So you're not going to see any CLR when you have C++ underneath, for example. Mm-hmm. So I just want people to understand that, just to be clear. So we got that out of the way. So launch delay will always kill WAC. Excuse me, I need to drink some water. But I've seen it on a Reddit thread.
Yeah, and you know, and that's again one of the other tips that I mentioned is like you can. I don't want to say trick the WAC, but or trick your users. But again, it's all about managing the user experience. And so, using that extended splash screen UI, like you get past your app as far as to the WAC or to the APIs has. The second you take that handshake from the extended splash experience, you have informed the runtime, I'm ready. So that threshold that you were about to cross is no longer anymore. Like you are actually the running app, and you've just chosen to take a hold of a better splash screen experience or provide new information.
Excellent.
So it's a simple, small tip, and it's actually very easy to do. There's SDK samples on it.
Great.
That provides, again, a significant advantage to perceived user experience.
Cool.
As well.
So we have 20 seconds left, Tim.
Yes.
This is a 20-second answer. Clinton Mann, suggestions for labs or tools for learning XAML?
I think the SDK samples are a perfect example. I would go there, find out the APIs you're interested in, and just start going through them. There's also the Contoso Cookbook Lab, which provides an end-to-end simple application from simplicity to retrieving data to data binding to all that good stuff. Available actually in JavaScript, native, and managed. So your flavor of choice.
Rock and roll. Always great to talk to you,
thank
Tim.
You.
Great job.
Thank you.